Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of God-Sized Stories. This is your host, Patricia Holbrook, and today I have a treat for you. I have another interview with my friend, author, and pastor, Max Lucado. Join us as he talks to us about his brand new book, God Never Gives Up on You. The beginning of the conversation is really fun as we share things about Brazil, which is something we have in common since he lived there for 5 years in the beginning of his ministry. Our conversation then turns to his new book, and he reminds us that God is never done with his children, no matter our past or our present circumstances. With his unique storytelling abilities, comical and creative illustrations, and profound insights, Max will take us on a journey through the life of Jacob, a flawed and imperfect yet beloved figure in the Bible. Stay tuned as we discover how God's faithfulness shines through even the darkest moments and the most unlikely individuals. If you enjoy my show, would you take a moment to review it on your podcast platform and share it with your friends and family? Remember, when you share it on social media and tag me, you enter your name for a chance to win a copy of Max Lucado's book. Well, enjoy my conversation with Max.
How's it going?
I am doing great. How are you doing?
I'm good.
Como vai?
Muito bem.
Muito bem.
How's my favorite Brazilian?
I'm doing great. Thank you. Yes, I just came back from Brazil.
Where did you go? Why were you there?
Well, my parents, I'm the only one here. So okay. My dad is 89 this year. And so my mom is 80. So I just went to spend some time with them there. I go there and then I work from there for some weeks. And I also am trying to bring my ministry to Brazil, finally, after 12 years. And so I was there meeting with the church, about translating my book to Portuguese and trying to get into the Brazilian market. So I'm very excited about that.
Are you? Did it go well?
Yes. Yeah, so still talking to a publisher there, still in that beginning. Just finished the translation. Now it needs to be reviewed. And then just talking to this pastor in Brazil. His book, his devotional book, was published there, and it was number one seller in the entire country.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
So he's, I'm excited about it. So I'll probably be going, I'm hoping to be beginning of this next year to do like a tour and,
Remind me where in Brazil you grew up?
Santa Catarina.
Santa Catarina.
Sul do Brasil.
Sul do Brasil. that's such a beautiful country, part of the nation, isn't it?
Yes, it's. Have you been there?
I went. I made a couple of trips to Rio Grande do Sul.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I'm trying to remember the town.
So it'll be the last state down south.
Porto Alegre. That's where I went. I did. I went there three times. One of my friends was a pastor of a church in Porto Alegre. And so we went to see him. One time my mother visited me when I lived in Brazil, and I took her to Falls de Iguaçu.
Oh, beautiful.
So I went down to that area, but I never went to Santa Catarina.
It's beautiful. It's gorgeous. You need to go. So the capital of the state is an island, right? Florianópolis. You probably have heard.
I have heard of it.
It has 46 beaches. It's just like breathtaking.
Good grief. So is that where you went? You went to Florianópolis?
Well, yes, that's where I stayed, mostly in Florianópolis in Itajaí, where my dad lives in Itajaí. My parents are divorced, so my mom lives in Florianópolis and my dad in Itajaí. So I stayed between the two cities there. But I actually went to school in Curitiba, which is, you know.
I know Curitiba.
Yes. So I went to school there, and I actually started a ESL school for business. For companies in Brazil.
So did you grow up bilingual?
Well, kind of Spanish and Portuguese a little bit. My great grandmother was from Spain, and so learned a little Spain when I was little, and then I started studying English when I was just 10 years old, and then I just fell in love with the language.
Do you have a facility, do you think, with languages?
Yes, I do. I went to France when I was 23, and actually a little younger than that. And I hated, because back then French people would not speak to you if you didn't speak their language. So I came back to Brazil and I said, I'm going to learn French. So I learned French. Like later in life, but
you're amazing.
You're
amazing.
Just no.
So, in what language do you think?
It depends on where you are. What I'm speaking. So, like right now, I guess I'm thinking in English. But then, if I'm speaking Portuguese, I'm thinking Portuguese. You know.
In what language do you dream?
Mostly in English now. Yeah. Mostly in English. Now, it's funny because when I was in Brazil, you know, after 2 weeks there, then you start. But it's funny. One of the funny things is that I have a hard time praying Portuguese.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it's true. I don't know if it's because, see, when I moved here, I was a fairly young Christian. Like I had been, like as far as depth of the word, you know, knowing the Lord, really. I got saved at 25. I moved here when I was 30. And that's when I really started.
2 years ago?
2 years. I wish, Max. 24 years ago. Not that. but anyway, I started, I moved here, and then it was like a lot. That's when I really started digging into the word.
Okay.
And so I think most of my studies have been in English, just my materials that I've studied and everything. So, So as a matter of fact, my book that I wrote in English now, and the translator had a hard time with certain things because it's like, okay, it's just, I gotta, but hopefully a publisher will publish there. I'm excited about it.
How long have you lived in the U.S.?
Going on 24 years.
24 years.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's been a long time.
And it's been good, been positive for you, your time here?
It's been great. So I married, my husband is American. So, when I came here, I pretty much already got involved in American society. I already spoke English. My accent was harsher, I think, but I already spoke fluent English because I had been an English teacher in Brazil and then ended up owning my own language school there. So I was fluent, just my accent was, thicker, I guess. But then we got involved a lot in the American society. In America, at least here in the South, they're very welcoming. Mm-hmm. If you are... You know, I've always felt that it was somehow an asset to be a foreigner here. Like, in the fact that as long as you love this country, and I love America. I mean, of course, I'm an American citizen. I have been here. But I just, I think that they really appreciate when you're here and doing it the right way. And so I've always... I've never had an issue. It was very hard in the beginning.
It was.
Yeah. I miss my family so much.
You had a lot of saudades.
Muita saudade.
Muita saudade.
Não tem palavra em inglês.
Não tem. And it doesn't work to matar saudades. You can't ever kill them.
No. It's so true. You can never kill it.
You try.
You try.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well. I'm going to be writing a book. I'm going to be reaching out to your publicist to see if you can read it for.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
That's wonderful. It's a great accomplishment. Yeah. Great accomplishment.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Yeah. Well, I'm way behind you. You're going on how many books now, Max? Do you even know?
Well, the key is quantity. And don't worry about quality.
Okay.
Quantidade. Qualidade. Hey, did I ever tell you my Brazilian joke, my Portuguese joke?
No.
Qual é o animal mais preguiçoso no mundo?
Qual o animal mais preguiçoso do mundo? Okay. No, I don't know.
You what started to say preguiça, didn't you?
Yeah, o bicho preguiça.
Yeah. No, é o peixe.
O peixe. Por quê?
O que é que ele faz?
Ele não faz nada.
I love to tell that joke because it doesn't work in English. But
it does not work in English. I'm not going to be able to translate to the audience and they will not get the laughter. You know, this is very true also the other way around, because some of the American jokes that you guys just die laughing and we are like,
that doesn't work. Yeah.
What was funny about that?
Doesn't survive the translation.
Does not. Well, so good to talk to you again.
It's good to talk to you. It really is. Thank you for making time.
Of course. And it's been, it hasn't been that long. But and here you are, like you said, quantity, not quality.
Yeah. You can just crank them out.
So I have a question on that. So you don't even remember probably how many books you've written.
You know, I think I do. I think I'm in the mid-40s.
Wow.
Like 44, 45. Yeah.
That's amazing. So I have one. That's just, I'm so behind you, Max.
Well, you'll catch up.
I got a crank up.
You're a lot younger.
Not that much, I don't think.
You'll get caught up.
Oh, well, so help me God, we'll see. But I know that the beginning of your books, you they were pretty much translations, but you were writing a lot about what you were teaching at church, right? Mm-hmm. Is it still that way? So you still do a series?
I still do a series or two at our church each year. I'm not senior pastor anymore.
Right.
It was time to turn that over to a wonderful younger guy. But I still preach about 20 times a year at our church. And then I speak at other churches quite a bit. So I will take the messages, that I present at our church and turn those into a book.
Yes. It's amazing how much content you have. You know, that exactly happened to me when I was putting together my first book. I go back to all my blogs and I'm like, oh my goodness, I had half of my book written.
Absolutely.
I find this common thread on the messages, you know, of what, of course, God is speaking in your heart or doing in your life. And I know that the last one that we talked last year was about the Holy Spirit. I'm assuming that it was very successful because it was an incredible book. And it's still very, very fresh, right?
Still hadn't been out. I don't know exactly. Let's see.
Yeah.
At this point, I think it's been out about 8 or 9 months.
So, right.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Yeah. And here we come. We have a brand new book of Max Sapan. So it's called God Never Gives Up on You, What Jacob's Story Teaches Us About Grace, Mercy, and God's Relentless Love. Jacob, so tell me, Why Jacob for this particular book, Max?
I love Jacob. He's just a fascinating character. He is so inconsistent. Mm-hmm. He is, when you think about the famous patriarchs, you know, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, you can picture Abraham, you know, with a big beard, and Isaac with a kind of a robust a shepherd with a staff in his hand. But Jacob, when you read his story, he looks to me like a Las Vegas card dealer. Yeah, he's got this visor on. He's got a cigarette out of the corner of his mouth, and he's kind of mousy, yeah. Shy. Eyes are darting around because he was always gaming the system. He was always working to get a dealing from the bottom of the deck, trying to get things to go his way. You know, he's most famous for cheating his brother and lying to his father. And then he's most famous for being cheated and lied to by his father-in-law. He ends up with one wife he wants and one wife he doesn't. He ends up with two handmaidens and a dozen kids. He ends up wrestling with God in the mud of Jabbok. He's a part of an annihilation of a village. It's just ruthless. But then again, he's a part of a covenant that God makes with him. And the famous Jacob's ladder, you know, descends from heaven. And it's just this story that is so in and out, up and down, that it reminds me of my life. And I could always connect with someone like Jacob. You read the story of Joseph or Daniel, you see like you think they never did anything wrong.
That's right.
But Jacob, you think, did he ever do anything right? and so I think the story of Jacob is a story for every person, because we can really relate to him.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's a perfect character for the title of your book, right? That God never gives up on you, because God never gave up on Jacob. I absolutely love your description, although I have to say I've never thought of Jacob as a car dealer in Vegas. But,
yeah.
But it makes sense. You're so right. He's always trying to get the upper hand on everything. So
yeah,
very true. Well, and, you know, when you read about Max Lucado, right, I know that you said that you could always connect with his story. So when we read about your ministry life, you are like a huge success story for Jesus, right? You think about, you have this prolific writing ministry recognized by numerous awards. Their books have sold more than 120 million copies. That's a lot, in 54 languages, bestseller, New York bestseller, New York Times bestselling, also US Today. I mean, so our tendency is to look at Max Lucado and think, you know, this guy has been rewarded by God because of a perfect life that he lives. He's just such a saint. But then you say that your book is not written for the saint, for the perfect saint, but actually you said the one with a tilted halo. So how do you count yourself, and explain to me that a little bit?
Well, I am just straight from the tribe of Jacob. What you said was very kind, but it's not that God has blessed me because I have been faithful, but he's blessed me because he has chosen to be faithful to me. I'm a mess. I'm a mess. I was a mess before he knew me or before I knew him. I was the kind of guy that no father would want their daughter to go out with. I battled alcohol at a young age, and I had an angry streak in me. I was controlling. I was manipulative. And I wish I could say that in the years that all of that has gone away, but it's still in there, still in there. I think to a minimum, it's far reduced. And by the power of the Spirit, much of it is under control. But I still I don't think for a moment that God is going to save me because of what I've done. My works add absolutely nothing to his finished work for me. And it's purely and totally by his grace. But I'm very, very grateful. I'm grateful for the life I've had to lead. And I find the story of Jacob to be so encouraging because it reminds me that God can use people like me to do things. When Jesus talked about the patriarchs, he talked about Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He didn't take Jacob's name off the list, and he didn't put a little asterisk by Jacob's name. You know, he is still Israel. His name was changed to Israel. I mean, his name is the name of the most famous nation in the world, the nation through whom God chose to reveal and unveil his plan. So it's hope. It's full of hope. I've got a lot of friends, you know, guys that I love to play golf. I really do. I love golf. And I play golf with a lot of Jacobs, you know, a lot of guys who by the 10th or 11th hole, have or having a hard time walking, you know, because they've had a few too many. They're always saying, "Oh, sorry, Reverend, I didn't mean to curse," you know, they're not the polished.
Right.
I feel like though their hearts are still seeking God. Mm-hmm. They long to know God. They're beat up. All of us are. They've been through tragedies, some of by their own creation. And so I kept thinking of my friends. Many of whom would not even call themselves Christians. But I kept thinking about them when I read about Jacob. And I want them to know, and I need to remind myself, that God has a place for the struggler. Yes. And God has a place for the stumbler. Mm. He doesn't give up on us. He doesn't quit. I would have long washed my hands of Jacob. Especially some of the events late in his life. Early in his life, you could almost understand, you know, it was his mother who urged him to cheat his brother and lie to their father. I mean, you know, they were all in that tangled family mess together. That was early in life. Late in his life, he still did some things, you know, like his sons basically went nuclear on a village. And it was just the most bloody, terrible story. And you say, Jacob, come on. Yeah. Need a little spiritual leadership here, but he doesn't provide it. Mm-hmm. So even late in his life, he seems to be missing in action or unplugged from God. But God never gave up on him. He never did. And so I love this story because there are some people who seem to succeed spiritually, but there are many of us who struggle spiritually, who desire to do what's right, but struggle. And Jacob's story, it reminds us that really the hero in all of our lives is God, and not you or me or Jacob, but the hero is God. And so I think that story of Jacob needs to be resurrected. By the way, there's not a lot written about Jacob. I was surprised. You know,
yeah, it's very true. I actually, our pastor at our church just finished a series on. He's going through Genesis, and he just finished a series on Jacob. And it was the first time that I remember sitting under a teaching about Jacob. You know, just with all those details that you're just saying, it's fresh in my mind just for having.
Oh, good.
You know, so good. It's.
I was surprised. Of course, commentaries talk about Jacob.
Right.
But if you Google books on Jacob, you find tons on Abraham, Moses, David. But Jacob, Yeah, there's a place for us to do a little more discussion about his life.
And I agree, because with what you just said about the so many believers, they really want to do what's right, but they have struggles, you know. And I think they struggle to keep living that faithful, straight line, you know. It's just by God's grace. And I agree with you. I guess I don't know if it's because, like you, I came to Christ later in life, like I wasn't a little kid. You know, I already had a history behind me of a lot of mistakes, a lot of, you know, a lot of things that some of the things that you have shared as well. You know, I shared the same story and other things as well. It's just like at 25 years old, if you don't know the Lord, you have a pretty big story already in your back.
That's
you
true.
Know? You know,
that's
you can a write a book about it. So yeah. I understand that. But I think that people like you and I who have had lives, you know, quite a life in the world, the enemy is always going to send some things your way, and it's going to be a struggle. It's just by the grace of God that you really live a victorious life in Christ. And then there are those people, right, who they have been believers, but they have that time where they just stray away, and they go, you know, and live a little wild life for a little while, and then they struggle to come back. And we have this Jacobs. I would say a great percentage of the church is comprised of this type of person, who maybe you look at them and you think they have it all together, but deep down inside, when it's just, you know, at home or behind closed doors, they are the ones who struggle, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm, yeah, just keeping their walk.
Yeah.
Hello everyone, Patricia here, and I just wanted to give you an update about the She Soars Women's Conference. We regret to inform you that due to some unforeseen circumstances, our event on October 13th and 14th at Kennesaw First Baptist Church has been postponed. We understand that some people will be disappointed, and we really apologize for any inconvenience. And we want to assure you that all admission fees will be refunded at this point. We also want to assure you that we are working to reschedule the conference for the spring of 2024. We will keep you updated with all the details as soon as they become available. Thank you so much for understanding, and stay tuned for more updates about She Soars. Well, let's get back to the show.
Jacob, he's a puzzle, you know, and his family, the stories of the family. He had one wife he loved, one wife he did not, yeah. And he had two handmaidens, and the guy just has babies with them all, you know, and then that creates its own type of chaos in the family, mm-hmm, because the sisters didn't get along and the handmaidens didn't get along. And yet this is the family again. This is Israel.
This is the 12 tribes of Israel.
The 12 tribes of Israel
come from him. So it's incredible. Mm. Incredible. Yeah. I just love that, because again, it just speaks of God's mercy and grace.
You know, in the first chapter, and the only reason this guy made his way into the book is because he was a guy I had dinner with the night before I began working on the book. I tell about going to a dinner here in South Texas and sitting at a table, and all the guys were at one table and all the ladies were at another table. All the guys were outside and all the ladies were inside. There's probably 8 or 10 guys. And then they find out I'm a pastor, and that always they make a few jokes about the pastor. You know, okay, we can't cuss. You know, I've heard them all my life. That's okay. You know, but toward the end of the dinner, the guy sitting to my right leaned over to me, and by now he's had 4 or 5 glasses of wine, and he's been puffing on a cigar most of the meal. And I don't know him. In fact, to be honest, if I had needed to find him right now, I couldn't. He's not like a friend of mine, but he knew I was a pastor. I want to guess he was in his 70s. At least he looked to be an older fella. And he leaned over and he began telling me his story. And he told me how he had become a Christian somewhere in the South. I want to say Mississippi or Alabama. But that the years had been hard and he had gone through a couple of marriages and had kids around, several kids, and gone through some businesses and bankruptcies. And then his question was, I wonder if God has a place for some old guy like me. And it was a good question. And here I was starting to do research on Jacob. I think literally the next day is when I started, and I thought about him, and I thought, I think he's a Jacob. I think he desires to do right. He's not a rebel, not willingly wicked, but he just didn't know if God would have a place for someone like him. Mm-hmm. And so I think the story of Jacob helps answer that question, because the last person that you'd think would be one of the patriarchs is someone who did what Jacob did, and yet God never gave up on him, never gave up on him. And I keep going back to the big idea, and that is the story of Jacob reminds us that God's grace just never quits. It doesn't. He doesn't love what we do, but he loves who we are. And he's already seen our lives, from start to finish. Mm-hmm. And so he has chosen to love us, not because of anything we do, but because he's simply chosen to do so. And so I'm hoping that this book lands in the laps of guys and gals like that, like the one I was talking to the night before I started the book.
That is great. And that was a divine encounter for you to find somebody.
Yeah,
who would ask
so.
The question that's kind of like the central question of your book, right? Like for that person who thinks, I've messed up so hard and I cannot find my way back, So what would you say? Like, what did you say to this man? If you could just summarize the message that you gave him, can you do that?
I said, if you can give me a year or two, I'll give you a book. No, I didn't say that. I didn't say that. I it's been so long, I don't recall exactly, but I do know that it was a very good conversation. And I assured him that the fact that he had breath was proof that God had not given up on him. And that our God, his nature is a God of new beginnings. Every day that his mercies are new, every morning, every sunrise is a reminder that he is perpetually washing our sins away, and that his grip on us is such that Jesus has declared, nobody can snatch them out of my hands. Right. Now we can all be more fruitful, I'm sure, in our lives, but the salvation that God offers is not based upon my performance. It is based upon his performance. That's the beauty of our gospel message. Mm-hmm. And I would desire that everybody lead a fruitful, abundantly profitable life. But I don't have any hesitation, Patricia, in assuring that person in the hospital bed who has been a scoundrel all their lives and who's cried out for the church to send them a pastor. And there I show up and he's hours from death and he's saying, is there any hope for me? And that's happened. It's Absolutely. Happened with all of us. And I have no doubt that man or those types of stories will result in a person spending forever in the presence of Christ, serving in the eternal kingdom.
Absolutely.
Because we're saved by grace, by putting our faith in God's grace, not by works. And so even Jacob is a picture of God's grace.
Absolutely. And, you know, I love that my grandfather, as a matter of fact, is a story like that, that he was raised Catholic, one of the best men I've ever known. I've never seen my granddad to just like lose his temper or anything. And so he got in on a coma. And at the time, my youngest aunt was the first Christian in my family. She was the born again Christian in my family. And he got in a coma and he came back from the coma and he asked for her. And he literally, he told her, he said that I had a dream and this man came to me and he said that I needed to talk to my aunt, you know, because there was something that I needed to do that I needed to do urgently. And so anyway, my aunt knew right away that she needed to lead him to the Lord, and she did. And he died like, I don't know, about 2-3 hours later.
My goodness.
And I just think, yeah, it's a true story. And I just think about like God's incredible grace to my granddad, who was an incredible man, like incredible, you know, just kind, but probably never knew that he had to, you know, surrender his life. He didn't have that teaching to him. Yeah. He had to accept Christ for his sins, you know, and God, it's just an incredible story, you know, that I shared. And I believe, well, we have in the gospel.
I love stories like that. Yeah, I love stories like that.
I know, me too. And it's in the gospels, right? It's the thief on the cross.
Absolutely. That's why I love the story of the thief on the cross.
Yes,
I love it. I can relate to him, you know, because he turns to Jesus and he says, "Remember me when you come into your kingdom." Mm-hmm. And that's a prayer of salvation. By saying kingdom, he acknowledged that Jesus was a king and he had a kingdom. And he's saying, please remember me. He didn't brag on what he had done. He's pleading, saying, please remember me. And what he said to the other thief was, don't you see, this man has done nothing wrong.
Yes.
This man has done nothing wrong. Exactly. We deserve what we have done, he said, but he has done nothing wrong. Mm-hmm. So he was acknowledging that he was a sinner. He was acknowledging that Jesus was sinless. He had done nothing wrong. And he was saying, Jesus, you're a king. Please remember me when you come into your kingdom. I never get tired of that. I never get tired of telling that story.
Isn't it amazing how God?
Yeah.
I just love that he just didn't leave anything out for us to just wonder, what about that person? What about this person? You know, the scriptures there's some things, of course, that we can debate over. But, you know, as far as like the acknowledgement of Christ as Savior, it just to me, just
you know, you and I have Brazil in common, and I love Brazil. I do. And I have many good friends in Brazil. Can I share a story? Please.
Yes, please.
Okay, so
you have time. Tell
how are we doing on time?
Are we? I think that we are 35 minutes in right now. And I am fine if you are.
I can't remember. Do we have an hour block?
We're fine with 1 hour.
Okay, so you know the city Itu?
Yes, in São Paulo.
Uh huh.
Yes. Uh huh.
So I have a friend who has pastored in Itu.
Mm-hmm.
I've always loved the name of that town. I studied Portuguese in Jacaré, which is not far from Itu. That's a whole nother story.
Yeah.
So I came to know a man who became a pastor there, and his father became a Christian in the city of São Paulo because every day he would take the train. I do not know what part, but a lot of people would take trains. You know? So he took the train and he would get off the train, and to get to his work, he'd walk through a neighborhood. And there was a Christian in that neighborhood who bought a chalkboard, the old style, you know, with chalk, not whiteboard, but chalkboard.
Yeah, yeah.
And every day he would write a verse up on that chalkboard. And one day, and so this man, my friend's father, the pastor's father, would walk past and he'd stop and he'd read the verse every day. And one day the verse said, Porque Dios amó o mundo de tal manera. For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only. Go ahead.
Deu seu único filho, Jesus, para que todo aquele que nele creia não pereça, mas tenha vida eterna. John 3:16.
Because God so loved the world that he gave his one and only son. So my friend's father read that verse, and it was enough for him to go up and knock on the door. And he became a Christian that day. Just the power of the gospel. And now this, his son has been a pastor in Itu all these decades, I think 30 or 40 years, I could find out. And it's just the fruit, you know, the power of the gospel, the power of the gospel to change a, not just one man's life, but the life of a, of his ancestry, his lineage.
Wow. Isn't that, you know, you said it all. We nowadays in this modern society, we try to think about ways to entertain the church, to, you know, different ways of presenting the gospel. There, we cannot forget the power of the gospel, just the gospel,
just the simple truth, gospel.
Simple gospel truth. That's amazing. Mm. Well, I have a question for you about the book again. You know, in the book, we know that that Jacob tried to bargain with God, right? And we do the same, right? We do the same. Why do you think that we do that?
Yeah. Yeah. And so can I give just a little context?
Yes.
So yes. Jacob sold out his brother, or tricked his brother. And when he did, Esau, the brother, was going to kill Jacob. Literally. He came at him with, he had a knife. He was going to kill him. And so Rebekah said, get out of here. So Jacob skedaddled, and he was going to Mesopotamia. He was going all far from home, and he spent the night in the desert. And that's the night that God appeared to him in a dream. Heavens opened, and Jacob's ladder, the famous Jacob's ladder, Jacob could see angels descending and ascending. And I think among the many messages is God was saying, Jacob, I'm still with you. So when Jacob wakes up, he builds an altar in honor of that moment or that place. But then he prays and he says, if you will bless me, O God, I will give to you one-tenth of all that I own. I will be faithful to you. And he begins this negotiation with God. And we want to go, Jacob, come on, man. What are you going to negotiate with? The guy is broke. He had to sleep on the desert floor and use a stone for a pillow. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have anything. His own family has turned against him. His brother would kill him if he could find him. And here Jacob has the audacity to think that he can negotiate with God. You know, he can work out a deal with God. In the book, I tell about doing the same thing. Again, we keep talking about Brazil, not just because of you, but partly, but that back in my Brazil days, my dad died of ALS. And I went to South America as a missionary, and my dad just kept getting sicker and sicker while I was there. And I got called back one time from Rio to Texas on an emergency trip because my dad was near death. He survived that particular bout, but died soon thereafter. But on that trip, after I went to the hospital, I spent some time with him. And then I drove out to the desert. I grew up in the desert in West Texas. And I did the very same thing that Jacob was doing. I said, God, I'm a missionary here. I've given up so much. I'm also sacrificial, da, 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 da. The truth is I was blessed, forgiven. I didn't have any, but I was negotiating with God and thinking that I had something to offer God. Now, the fact is we don't have anything to offer him. We don't. He is so far above, so splendid, so shot through with glory and beauty. What do I have?
Right.
Does he need my tithe? Is the gospel dependent upon my talent? If it is, our God is very, very small. He's puny. But sometimes our actions betray a belief in a small God instead of a belief in a great God. And so Jacob had this belief in a small God. He needed to have his understanding of God corrected, as did I. And that is that it's all God's grace. We are minnows. We are the smallest of fish in the Pacific Ocean of deity, of God's goodness and kindness. He doesn't need us. And but the Jacob, Jacob, he just didn't get this. He didn't understand this. And so he was negotiating. That's why, I loved the Jacob story, because he just... It could have been the Max Lucado story, you know.
Yes. Except for maybe you wouldn't dress as a dealer from Las
Vegas.
That's right.
I'm not aboard the poker hat.
Yes. Wow. That's a great insight. You know, you actually have a quote that I don't have right in front of me, but you said something about it. It's not about the strength of the vessel, but the power of the one who uses the vessel.
Exactly.
Something I kind of paraphrased you, but it was a quote that you said.
Yeah.
And it really is. It's very true, right? As a matter of fact, if you look throughout scriptures from Genesis to the Gospels, and beyond, you see God using the most imperfect vessels, right?
Absolutely.
Jacob is just one story, but talk about people wrecked and talk about people who are misfits. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just everywhere, you see, which to me, it's just another, it's that verse, I don't remember exactly where it is. That, you know, it is so that the power of God, when we're just broken vessels, Paul said, so that the power of God can be displayed through us, right?
Absolutely. Broken vessels. I'm glad you said that, because that gives me a pivot for if you'll let me read from the book itself.
I don't know if I'm allowed
to do that.
Yes, but, you are.
There's a section in here, if I can remember where it is. On God's faithfulness to us. So here's a summary of Jacob. We would logically assume that Jacob would be one special dude, a who's who in the holy hall of holiest people. Shouldn't he love the poor, comfort the sick, counsel the distraught? One would think so, but he did none of the above. He had his moments, just not many. He will inspire us, but he'll bewilder us more. His resume was more the stuff of a happy hour highball club than Sunday school curriculum. He married two sisters, but loved only one. He was passive while his wife squabbled. He slept with the maids. His family worshiped foreign gods. He chose to do nothing when his sons went Rambo on a village, slaughtering a tribe. His oldest son had an affair with his maidservant. His favorite son was sold into slavery by his brothers. He spent two decades as a fugitive. He was a dyed-in-the-wool sneak. The guy never preached, never prophesied, or said anything worthy of being framed. If you're looking for a star in a Hallmark movie, Jacob is not your guy. If, on the other hand, you want to see God's steadfast devotion, if you need to know how long God will put up with scoundrels, with a scoundrel and his scandals, if you're wondering if God's plan has a place for botchers, bunglers, schemers, and Job-like last chancers, who toss a coin to choose between their will and God's will. If you could benefit from a tale of God's unending, unbending, unswerving faithfulness, if you wonder if God could use a person whose halo has slipped, then the story of Jacob is what you need.
Mm.
That's wow. God's the hero of Jacob.
That is beautiful. I love that. And that's just a little teaser of this great book. I can't wait to read it. It sounds amazing. But I do know that in that book, you described that Jacob needed to have like a face-to-face with his past before he could move into his future.
Yeah.
Tell us how this can apply to our lives today for this person who's kind of like a Jacob.
Well, most people who know nothing of Jacob may know that one story of Jacob where Jacob wrestled with God in the mud of Jabbok. And there's a good discussion here. Is he wrestling with God? Is he wrestling with an angel of God? And we can talk about that at some point. But the big idea is he's wrestling. He and God are going toe to toe. It's a picture of that time in our lives in which we are trying to get God to do what we want God to do. We're wrestling with God's will. We're wrestling with God's destiny. We're wrestling with God's actions. And this story is so interesting because it appears that Jacob has won. It looks like Jacob is the victor. And then all of a sudden, with just a touch of the finger on the hip, Jacob crumples to the ground in pain. And the fight is over. And the imagery there, at least to me, suggests that God wrestles with us. He'll go with us. He'll back and forth with us.
Yep.
But at some point, he's going to call the shots. And there are those moments in which he lets us look in the mirror. He lets us see who we are. And he reminds us. He reminds us that apart from him, we can't even walk. He can bring us to our knees. In the book, I tell about this. Similar events have happened to me through the years. One in particular, I was in my early 50s. Life was moving at a great pace, hectic but wonderful. Our church was booming it. Our debt was all paid. My books, I could barely keep up with the demands. I was superstar, I was superstar. And even Christianity Today wrote an article all about me, called me America's Pastor. I just hate that right now, that title. Wow. But I was kind of proud of it,
Of course.
What they did not know and what you would not have known is that inside everything was coming undone. Our church staff was squabbling. I had ministers fighting over budget dollars. Emails were flying back and forth. I had a couple of great ministers quit and leave. I was the senior pastor, so I was supposed to fix it, but I had no clue what to do. And then I had deadlines. Everywhere I looked, I had overpromised, and I was about to underdeliver. I couldn't sleep at night. I had this cool-looking spiritual exterior, but in the interior, I wasn't doing that good. And I started drinking again, which has been a lifelong challenge for me. If I'm not careful, we'll turn to alcohol as a coping mechanism. I'm really not against alcohol. Right. I still like beer, but using it to cope, using it as a coping mechanism is wrong. It's just wrong. Right. And so I was a hypocrite because I would, at the end of the day, go to a nearby convenience store and sit out in my car, of all things, sit out there drinking a big can of beer. So there's Mr. America's Pastor. There he is, right there. And it was in one of those evening moments that I just felt a conviction from the Lord. And it was like he touched me on the hip and I crumpled. And I realized, if I don't if I don't get my act together, if something doesn't happen here, I'm going to be a train wreck. And so I talked to my wife. I told her what I was doing. I talked to our staff. I talked to our elders. And we began kind of piecing things together. I look back now, what's been almost 20 years since that. I think it's been right at, I'm 68, so that was early 50s, so nearly 20 years. But I look back now and I say, you know, that was good for me. Yeah. I needed that. I was out of control. I wasn't thinking correctly. I wasn't processing stress correctly. I needed that. I needed to wrestle with God, and I needed to be reminded that, you know, his reminder to me was firm. It was loving, but it was firm. And that is, you know, I can bring you to your knees with just a touch on the hip. Mm-hmm. And I needed it. I needed it. And so I think that's why I love the story of Jacob. Now, you know what? Even after that, God blessed Jacob, gave him a new name. From now on, you'll be called Israel.
That was the pivotal point, right?
Pivotal point. It was.
End of his life. It's
yeah. Incredible.
I love that you just shared this testimony. I had something similar happen to me during the pandemic. And, you know, same thing. I had a situation with my daughter, you know, that for the first time, my oldest daughter, she was going through a lot of things, for beginning of her adulthood. And it's for the first time as a mom, I felt completely hopeless, you know, like didn't know what to do, you know, felt. And it was the same thing. I started just coping with things that I really shouldn't. But again, what you just said, you know, alcohol or anything like that. It's to use that instead of God for comfort. That is the issue. Whether it's food, alcohol, or whatever it is.
But
at the same time, today, looking back, I'm just seeing that I needed that exposure, that faith flaw, that weakness inside of me that. Because a lot of times when you are on a spiritual high and people are just telling you how the amazing and your ministry is just booming and all of those things that you said, it's so easy for you to think, you know, look at what all that, you know, I'm doing. I mean, I must be something. And then it's, I love it that God, in his mercy, he just exposed your weakness for you to realize how much you depend on him, that there's nothing that... Once you were, you know, you went for comfort or anything that you liked before to go for comfort, none of that is like completely removed from your life necessarily. You know, you have to depend on him and look at him for comfort and peace and direction. Yeah. So I love that you shared that. And I think that a lot of people struggle with that. I really do.
Well, we have to ultimately put our trust in the faithfulness of God, because if we put our trust in our own performance or our own success, we're just going to collapse. You know,
absolutely.
I'm very, very empathetic to well-known Christian leaders or pastors who've collapsed. I see how it could happen.
Yep.
All these people think you're something special, and you start thinking you're something special. And before you know it, you're doing things that you pray no one ever finds out. And then you're spending your whole life covering up what you've done. And it turns into this tornado, this black hole. And so I'm empathetic. But somewhere along, we're all candidates for that kind of outcome. But we don't have to be. When you begin feeling that stress or when you begin feeling that pressure, be careful, be watchful, back away, take inventory, keep a group of people around you who will be honest with you, who will be encouraging, but also candid about where you're headed. Don't surround yourself just with people who will tell you, what you want to hear, but invite accountability. Have a group of people to whom you give permission to ask you tough questions. Mm-hmm. Because there's no doubt that Satan knows your cell number and he wants to bring you down.
Right. Yeah. I love that. I hate to, because I love talking to you, but we are getting to our time. We're coming to the end of our time. So, Max, always a pleasure to talk to you, and I hope we can do this again.
I'm sorry to have to bring it to a close so quickly.
That's
too.
All right.
It was a delight. Thank you. It's good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, Max. I'll see you next week.
Okay. Okay. Bye-bye. Até logo.
Até logo. Tchau. Thank you so much for listening to this interview. I hope it blessed you and strengthened you in your faith journey. If you enjoy my show, would you consider giving us a 5-star review and sharing it with your friends, family, or on social media? That helps in our ranking, and it's a blessing to me personally. Well, until we meet again, may God bless you and strengthen you as you continue to write your God-sized story. Thanks for listening.